So this afternoon, I'm going to be focusing and speaking about a project that we currently have, myself and my colleagues, Abelardo at USC and Guillermina at the Instituto de Psiquiatría Ramón de la Fuente Muñiz, which is located in Mexico City. This is actually an international research collaboration that was funded by NIDA to look at kind of the emergence and the diffusion of crack use in Mexico City. And briefly, I can tell you one of the reasons why, you know, if those of you who are familiar with drug use patterns and the literature that exists, in the U.S., crack use has been primarily the drug of choice of African-American populations. But we were working on another NIDA-funded project in New Orleans post-Katrina, and we realized one of our big findings there was the high rate of crack use among the Latino day laborers. And so this kind of sparked our interest. And we wanted to see, well, what's going on in the countries of origin of a lot of these individuals who are in the U.S. And so, of course, we found some initial data, not a lot, but we clearly saw that there was a potential for an epidemic in Mexico City. So while a lot of the research that has been done on drug use in Mexico has tended to focus on the border areas, and this is primarily because, you know, a lot of the drug prevalence rates in Mexico are really high in these border communities with the U.S. Very little has been done in other parts of Mexico, and so that was one of our interests, to look at Mexico City, you know, the largest city in the country of Mexico. So, you know, variations in crack practices in terms of populations, regions, and use practices are very wide and considerable. You know, things like mode of self-administration, frequency of use, preparation, the market vary. And there's a lot of literature, particularly in the U.S. and Europe, that have focused on these wide variations. For instance, in Sevilla, in Madrid, most users buy pre-processed crack, while in Madrid and Barcelona, they make it themselves or with the help of friends, usually at the time of use. So a lot of this literature was very important for us to take into consideration when looking at the emergence and the diffusion of crack use in Mexico. Why is crack use so important, and what are the public health risks associated with it? If you're not familiar, if you are, please bear with me. Much of the existing research has documented crack's highly addictive and psychopharmacological effects of intense stimulation that has primarily been associated with increased sexual risk practices. And a lot of the research, and we know for a fact that there is very little effective treatment for crack abuse and dependence. And so obviously, if we're working in a country that is starting to see the emergence of these types of patterns, there are very important long-term consequences for this. So currently, there has been a shift in the dynamics of the crack epidemic. What we're seeing is that it's spread in the U.S. from African American to Latino populations, as I mentioned from my initial comments, and from the East Coast to more nationwide. We are also seeing a spread from high-income countries in North America and Europe to middle and low-income countries in Latin America. As a matter of fact, a week from today, I'll be traveling to Brazil, where there is a big epidemic. It's gone beyond where Mexico is in terms of crack use. So, you know, we're starting to talk about what can we learn from what's happened in places like Brazil and other Latin American countries that may contribute to effective interventions. Much of this is associated with the spillover effects from changing drug trafficking routes from the Caribbean to Mexico as a result of a lot of the interdiction policies. And if you're familiar with the situation in Mexico, the big interdiction policies that have been taking place in the last, you know, anywhere from like 5 to 10 years, has really created a spillover in that a lot of the drugs are staying in the country and has created kind of this emergence of these patterns. And this is very similar to what we saw back in the 1980s, for instance, in Miami, where crack use was attributed to the fact that the Colombian government's restriction on ether created this diversion of coca paste through Central America and the Caribbean, and it resulted in the introduction of a smokable coca paste via migrants from Jamaica, Haiti, and Trinidad. So this is something that may be potentially occurring in these Latin American countries. Briefly, crack use in Mexico, what we know. What did we know when we initially wanted to look at this problem? It's obviously a recent emergent phenomena. Treatment admissions increased from 8% in 2003 to 40% in 2007. And this was something that had gone unnoticed. Our collaborators, the Instituto de Psiquiatria, they're in charge of collecting the National Drug Survey in the country, and so they had some data, but they hadn't realized what kind of problem was emerging until we started doing some preliminary work for the proposal, and they realized, wow, you know, there is something going on here. And so we know very little about how it has actually spread among the local drug-using population. So what we're doing with this project is we're using an analytical construct from the diffusion of innovation theory. And if you're familiar with this, it's basically looking at how there's a diffusion of innovation. So how social influences of innovators lead to the adoption and spread of such things as drugs in the wider community. And I can talk a little bit more about our theory and how we're applying it, maybe in the question and answer. So briefly, what is our overview of our research design? We were in the field. We've been using ethnographic methods to identify current crack users recruited in three delegaciones. If you're not familiar with Mexico City has about 16 delegaciones, which are, I guess, comparative to boroughs in New York. So we selected three, and I can talk a little bit about how we selected those, but these were obviously delegaciones with some of the higher rates of evidence of crack use. We did social mapping, and we did some extensive adaptive sampling methodology. And in the interest of time, you know, I'm going to kind of gloss over a little bit over this, but I can tell you that in doing this project, our field staff said initially, you want us to interview crack users and out in the street? And how do you plan us to do this? So it was, you know, one of the things about an international collaboration is that you try to build capacity of your partners in these countries to conduct this type of research. And I can gladly say that our interviewers and our field staff were able to identify 150 crack users in those three delegaciones. And what we did is we were looking at individuals who were 18 years of age and older, self-reported crack use at least once during the last 30 days. And these were actually individuals who had they were not currently participating in any kind of formal drug treatment 30 days prior to enrollment. So these were, you know, the hardcore, you know, drug users that were not in any type of services. So, you know, the focus of my data today is the types of paraphernalia that we found that these users were utilizing. And I just want to mention the pictures you're seeing are actually from our field staff out in the field when they were working on this project. In this particular picture, you see what is being used as a filter. It's basically copper. And I have another picture that I'll show you where they get it from. But primarily, crack use is being used via pipes, and a lot of these are either glass, they're store-bought, and or metal pipes. And a lot of the metal pipes we found that they were using were like car antennas, television antennas, and more recently, I didn't put it up here, but what we're also seeing is, I don't know, and this is I'm still trying to figure out kind of the translation for this, but there's a lot of, in Mexico, you're walking on the street, there's a lot of wiring sometimes, and so some of these users are cutting pieces of these wires, they're cutting off the outer coating, and so it leaves what would look like a pipe with some of these I don't even know what it's called. Maybe some of you can help me out. But so a lot of them are using pipes, but there are also metal and plastic cans in what they refer to el bote or la lata. So these are aluminum cans that they actually use to consume the crack. And I don't know if you've heard of Yakult, these plastic, some of you are nodding, so these plastic yogurt cans. So they also as well use some of these items. Other types of paraphernalia, droppers or goteros. In Mexico, you know, if you get gotas or you get, you know, medication, it comes in these glass little containers, and the goteros are made out of glass, so they take the top off, and so they're able to use that as an instrument. Other items, writing pens, and like I said, the pieces of copper. And you can see in this picture what this user is doing. I don't know if you can see it in the back, but they're taking the copper out of some of this wiring, and that's what they use. If you saw this, that's what they use as a filter. And, of course, aluminum paper. So this is the types of paraphernalia that they're using. And so what we're finding in terms of the risk behaviors is a lot of paraphernalia sharing because a lot of the use is done in small groups. We're seeing a lot of cases of burns and open sores and accidental swallowing of some of the paraphernalia, i.e. the copper that they're using as a filter. So this is some data that we have. I left the Spanish translation. Sometimes it's very hard to actually translate or capture what the person is saying. But this is an example of some paraphernalia sharing. You know, this is actually a young man, and he talks about how he did it with all of them there at his brother's house. We got together, began to suck on the pipe, all of us, give it to me, and that was it from then on every week. So again, we kind of see the influence of family members and you know, the fact that this was a clear case where they were sharing a pipe amongst themselves. Gerardo this was Maria. She was 31 years old. She talks about her boyfriend, Gerardo, being addicted, you know, and he always smoked using the can in his house. Every time I saw him, he was hitting it. Before you know it, you're fucked up, stealing from people's wallet, you know, to get more. So again, you know, we kind of see the influence of, in this case, partners, sexual partners, and the utilization of the can, el bote, la lata. Burns and open sores, there's a lot of this going on. You know, the first person talks is Yasira. She's 29 years old, has been using crack since she was about 20 years old. She says, como no sabía fumarla, me quemé los dedos y la boca. She talks about how, you know, when you're smoking crack, especially when you're using those glass pipes, they burn, they heat up so fast, and it causes a lot of burns to these individuals. Usaba con un chavo en papel de aluminio, so the use of aluminum foil, again, as a paraphernalia for this. And then, as I mentioned, the swallowing of paraphernalia, you know, this person talks about how when they use it, they always worked on, made sure it was tightened. But in this case, you know, she used it from a friend, and she took a smoke, and the piece of copper went into her mouth and her throat, and she talks about burning her tongue and her throat. So I think, you know, I talked a little bit about, you know, the title. You're probably wondering, where does un jalón, un volteón y otra vez? So this is actually a practice that is very common where the individual takes one of those pipes, they smoke one or two rocks, piedras. Then what they do, they take a stick and they put it on the other side and they run the filter through it to get the residue that's on the walls. And then they take another hit. And a lot of them talk about how that's even more intense than just like one rock. So I think what we're seeing is a deep-seated subculture that is sustained by easily accessible street-level crack market and an extensive social network that fosters the adoption of unsafe paraphernalia. I think what we're seeing is potential social and health risks that have not been addressed in this existing international literature. the different types of paraphernalia and the types of networks that are diffusing this. We're hoping that our findings will develop a more kind of theory-based for HIV and STI interventions for this high-risk population, and maybe designing a peer-based brief intervention. And I think I want to end with the fact that I think what you know was what is important, or the implications for public health, is that I think we need to learn from our colleagues in Canada. I don't know if anybody here is from Canada, but in Canada, they're implementing a safe crack user kit, where they're actually putting kits out for crack users that have mouthpieces that are made out of rubber so that they don't share. They're also using different types of pipes that won't explode and burn a person's hands. And I think we need to think about, in this particular context, how we can reduce these users' exposure to filters and paraphernalia that may be coated with potentially toxic substances, because I think we don't really know what the health implications of what they're using and what they're consuming may have. So I want to thank you, and this is just our field team. I want to recognize our PI and NIDA for funding this project. So thank you.